Our lesson this morning is in the nature of a report from the elders to the congregation. You might think of it as sort of a state of the church message. But there will be some preliminary remarks before we get to that. We felt that it was necessary for us to have this particular message at this time because there is a crisis that faces us. Crisis is an interesting word. Someone said that the Chinese symbol for crisis is exactly the same as the symbol for opportunity. Crisis doesn't have to be bad. Our English word crisis comes from the Greek word for judgment. Not in the sense of judgment being condemnation, but in the sense that it's time to make a judgment or make a decision. It's a decision time. Have you ever noticed that many times we just kind of drift along until a crisis presents itself? And then when we face up to the crisis, we have the opportunity to make some changes. Some changes that if we had been wise enough, astute enough, we might could have seen them coming a long time before. But nevertheless, things finally get into a position where we realize that we can't go on the way we are. This happens in marriages sometimes. They drift along, things are going along until suddenly there is a crisis. Thank you. And then a decision can be made. A decision to either give up or to do something about it. And that's what the crisis is. That's why it's opportunity. Because it is an opportunity for us to make those changes that will enable us to get back on track. Those of you who've been a part of the Plymouth congregation for a long time know that right now Plymouth is not what it used to be. Am I correct? That somehow something has changed. And we're uneasy with that change. But now maybe this crisis can help us to get back on track. The crisis here is manifested in two ways. One of them is financial. I have more to say about that later. The other one is involvement. We know that not as many people are as involved as they used to be. And we know that our finances are worse than they used to be. And we're not sure why. Well, one reason is that quite a number of our people that were here a few years ago have moved away. By the way, I hope to see one of these tomorrow night. I hope to be with see Tony Gordon. Gordy is going to be working. He works nights. But I hope to be able to see Tony tomorrow night up in Mobile. That's why as soon as we finish here today, after the service, Marion and I are going to be leaving. But Gordy and Tony are just one couple that have been here that have moved. Just most recently, Rex and Teresa left. And when you lose people, you lose workers, especially people like those When you lose people like that, you also lose financially because of their giving. And they gave generously. And that means there's not as much money, there's not as many people. So when we say we need more money, we need more people, what we're really saying is we don't have as many as we used to have. But it doesn't take much to look around and tell that, does it? And that means that some changes have to be made. Financial and involvement. Both of these have a common root. Someone asked, what are the two greatest problems in the church? The fellow he was asking says, I don't know and I don't care. And he named both of them, ignorance and apathy. Now, those things also have a common root. Ignorance and lethargy have a common root, and that is, Bert, what is it? What's missing? What's missing when people are lethargic and ignorant? What's missing? You've said it many times. Commitment. Commitment. It's lack of commitment. Someone said that you can tell what a person loves by looking at his checkbook. I would add to that his date book. We don't all keep a date book, but we do keep one up here. How do we spend our time? How do we spend our money? Those two things will reveal what we care for. And there's a lot of wisdom in that saying. In fact, Jesus said something very much like it in the Sermon on the Mount. In Matthew chapter 6 and verse 19, he said, or verse 21, excuse me, he said, for where your treasure is, what? There will your heart be. That's where your love is going to be. What you love is what you spend money on. And what you spend money on is what you love. They go together, don't they? When our heart is with the Lord, our time, our treasure, our talent are going to follow. We will use what we have for Him when we love Him. Monty, you've been bringing some wonderful lessons along this line. You've been preaching your heart out.
Amen. Amen.
All I'm doing is underlining it from the elder's point of view. But our problem is that it's easy for us to talk the talk without walking the walk. How much does Jesus mean to you, personally? Is He more than life to you? Do you see Him as the source of all that is good and perfect in life? Do you see Him as the source of joy and all blessings? You know, we just sang a song that said, Jesus is all the world to me. Do we mean it? Do we sing it knowing what we're singing and meaning it? Do we put ourselves into His hand and trust Him to keep us and protect us no matter what? Can we, with Paul, say, I know whom I have believed and am persuaded that He is able to keep that which I have committed to Him against that day? You know, we just sang, all to Jesus I surrender. Did we sing it just mouthing the words, or did they come from our hearts? You see, we need to examine ourselves and ask ourselves questions like this. Do we find that our life's purpose and goal is fulfilled in working with Him and for Him as we walk in His ways, in His paths? Do we put all of our energy and purpose into serving Him by ministering to the needy and by proclaiming the message that salvation is free? We just sang, to the work, to the work. We're servants of God. Are we eager to do that? Or is it just words to us in a song that mean nothing? Are we really ready to walk with Him, ministering to those in need and heralding our salvation that is free? And are we ready to do this as long as we live? To keep working with Him and for Him because we are looking forward to that heavenly rest? Are we ready to work till Jesus comes, as we just sang? Because we love heaven more than earth, and we love life with Jesus more than our life here. Or did we just sing that we will work till He comes, or did we mean it? Someone said that it is the height of foolishness to keep doing what you've always done, hoping to get a different result. If you want things to change, you've got to change something about what you're doing or what you are. If we're hoping for things here at Plymouth to be different than they are, we need to change. If you're content for everything to go on the way it is, and in just a minute I'm going to show you the way it is financially, then we can keep doing what we've always done until we can't do it any longer. That's why we have crisis. Decision time. Time to make a choice. We can choose to go on the way we've been going, just hoping that somehow we'll muddle through. Or we can make some choices, individually and collectively. Now, in one sense, the collective decision is in the hands of each person. Because what we choose individually is going to determine what collectively we're able to do. We need to change not everything. Not everything needs to change. You know, sometimes when you listen to the politicians, they think you'd get the feeling that everything has to be changed all of a sudden. Well, not everything has to change. But we do have to change some things that are keeping us from our core mission as a church. Now, what is our core mission? I want some feedback. What is our core mission as a church? To seek and save that which is lost. Anything else? To support each other, to glorify God in our lives, both individually and collectively. You know that passage in Matthew, it says, let your light so shine before men. That your there is a plural. In the Greek, you can be either singular or plural, and here it is plural. He's not saying, you, Charlie, let your light shine. He says, you, people, you disciples of Jesus, let your light shine. And he had just said the verse before it, a city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. And neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick, and it gives light to all that are in the house. Now, you can hide a single light, a single candle, but you can't hide a city that is set on a hill. And here the church, the disciples of Jesus collectively, are viewed as a city that is set on a hill. And he says, when you are living the kind of life that I want you to live, the kind of life that you do live when you walk with me and in me, your light cannot be hidden. Let it shine. Let it shine all the time. Let it shine. We don't want to hide it, do we? What am I doing here? Okay. Somehow over the years, we have made some choices, unintentionally, in good faith, that have resulted in us now not being able to do everything that we would like to do. Okay, when we look at our checkbook, how does it square with our mission? If we look at our time, how does it square with our mission? That's individually and congregationally. If we look at our talents, how are we using them? Are we using them for ourselves? All of these things. Are we using these more for ourselves? Or are we using them more for the glory of God? Maybe we need to learn again how we can seek first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, trusting Him that all of these other things will be added to us. So our crisis presents us with opportunity to adjust what we are doing so we can get back to our core mission. Now, what is the crisis? It presents itself as a financial mess. But our finances are not the problem. They're a symptom of the problem. The twofold problem of the congregation being smaller than it was just a few years ago and having the burden of obligations that are not part of our core mission. Now let me show you what I mean. Take this just a minute to warm up. This is material that I presented more fully, maybe, at the men's meeting 2 weeks ago. It was the feeling of the men who were there then that this needed to be seen by all of the congregation, and so that's why it's being presented here today. This was, since I was gone last week, this is the first opportunity that I've had to be able to do it. And they felt that I should be the one to make this presentation. The budget that we're working under this year never was formally adopted because even at the time, at the beginning of the year, we knew it was a mess and we weren't sure what to do about it. And so we just kind of let things slide. And for that, as elders, we have to take some responsibility. Maybe we should have brought this to the fore back in January. But for one reason or another, and we won't make excuses, we didn't. Basically, what we're operating on is a budget carried forward from last year, except that it includes some things that were not in the other one. It includes a raise for Monty. It includes the note payments. We do still have a note on the property that we bought. In previous years, we had been paying that note from rental house income, from the rental houses over here, but more about that in a moment too. There's some things it does not include. Obviously, it does not include LB's health insurance allowance. Since he passed away, that's no longer a part of our budget. It does not include income from the rental houses, and it never has. Our operating budget has never included that. Instead, that has gone for basically for payment on the note and the taxes on those properties. And with a little bit left over for upkeep. But we have not been doing a very good job of the upkeep, and so that's part of the reason that for some changes here. The repairs for the rental houses are to come from the rental house income. But there's not enough income there to do what we had been doing with it and fixing them. Our goal for this year was that we would make the needed repairs on those rental houses and let the income from it go for that this year. But to do that, we had to shift the note payment into the operating budget. Now, here are some hard figures for us to face. Notice that's outlined in black. There's a reason for that. Our annual budget comes to $108,000 and a little over $2,000, almost $2,100 a week. However, our projected annual income, based on our average per week up through the 13th, that's Sunday 2 weeks ago, I didn't adjust these figures after that meeting 2 weeks ago. Our average per week, year to date, at that point anyway, was $1,666, which left us with a shortfall of $21,500 for the year, $415 per week projected over a year, or $583 per week projected from 2 weeks ago forward to the end of the year. Now, obviously, something's got to give, because we don't have it in reserve. And so something's got to change. We can't do it. You can't operate your family that way. You can't operate a church that way. You see, a budget is a plan. A plan that takes into account income and also your outgo. If your budget is out of balance, you've got to do one of two things. You've either got to raise your income or decrease, lower your expenditures. I don't know any other way to do it. In a family, if our budget, family budget is out of line, what do? The first thing we do is what? We start cutting out a few things, don't we? Because we generally find that that's easier to do than to raise the income. Now, government, if their income, if their budget is out of balance, which I don't know. In our federal government, I think it's been out of balance for I don't know how many years, more often than not, for as long as I've been alive. But the instinctive reaction of a politician is to what? Raise the taxes, so we'll get more income. They don't like to think about cutting anything out. What's the first thing that is said in a church when we need more, when our balance, budget is not balanced? What's the first thing that we say? What do we say first? That wasn't the first thing that men said. Give more! Give more! Well, a balanced budget is going to match these up, income and outgo. Well, can we raise the income? You know, a couple of months ago, Cletus made a statement to the congregation that we needed to raise our giving. And it did go up a significant amount. Not enough to balance the budget, but it did go up a significant amount for about 1 month. And then it dropped back down again. How much can we really raise our income? Now, it can be raised. Don't get me wrong. If every adult who is a regular attender here were to increase their giving by $10 per week, that'd be $20 for me and my wife, because there's two of us. we could pretty well cover that shortfall. But think about these facts about our congregation. We have, I went through and counted up, 58 regular attending adults. But of these, 28 are retired. Well, three of these do work part-time. That's me and Cletus and Cliff. But still, 28 retirees. Of the balance, those who are fully employed are only 25. And five of these attend without their spouse, at least on a regular basis. Sometimes the spouse may come, but not as a regular thing. And so you can't say that they have complete control of their finances. But there's something even more important, and that is that only 30 of these attend more than once a week. Now, I know that church attendance is not the only mark of our commitment to the Lord, but it is a straw in the wind. And if nearly half of the adults who are here on a more or less regular basis, at least once a week, if nearly half of them only come that one time a week, that suggests to me that there may be something, not necessarily, but may be something that is lacking in their commitment to the Lord as a full-time part of their lives. Yes, it's nice to have him there in a pinch, and so I'll keep my foot in so people don't think I'm a stranger when I show up needing some comfort and encouragement for one thing or another. But, and then there are only 25 of those who are here virtually every service. Well, we can grow the church. We do need more numbers, don't we? Let's grow the church. And that's, we want to do that. But can we do this quickly enough to avert this crisis? Well, the only other thing then, if we can't do that sufficiently, and we can do some of that. We can raise contributions, I'm convinced. But if we can't do that and not likely to be able to do that in sufficient amount, and the only other alternative is to reduce expenditures, the elders asked Mark, our treasurer, to present us with a list of things that we could look at to reduce our expenditures. Here's the list that Mark came back with. We could do one or more of the following. Last week, Cletus made a statement to the congregation that he was going to be stepping down from the pulpit as of the end of August. Not until after Monty's mission trip to Germany. That would be $200 a week. These are per week. The secretary could be let go. That'd be another $76. Cleaning the building cost us $85 a week. Mowing the lawn is about $24, spread over the year, is about $24 a week, although I think most of the lawn mowing expense is just about on top of us right now with the summer coming on and the growing season. But all of those combined are only not enough. It's getting closer, though. That would get us within $200 a week. That's still $10,000 a year, over a year. Well, can we eliminate all of these? Cletus has already said he's going to be stepping down, but that's not until the end of August. That's two-thirds of the way through the year. We could probably do without a secretary. We like to have one, but we could probably do without it. Cleaning the building? That means we'd have to have some volunteers. That means some time. Shirley's not here. I can't ask her how long does it take her to clean, but I would say a minimum of 4 hours a week. Do we have enough people willing to put 4 hours a week into that work to get it done? When we presented this to the men's meeting, they said, we've been down that route, and it's kind of hard to do. Mowing the lawn, I kind of doubt that we can get volunteers to do that, because we got a lot of grass here to cut, and we don't have a lawnmower that's able to do it. Charlie's been doing it, and this cost here includes his mower and his gas and his time. And time he's paid for the mower and the gas, he's pretty near given his time, I can assure you. So, can we do it just by reducing expenditures? Or what else can we do? There's one thing, we can be careful in all of our expenditures. You know, there's a tendency by some of us to, when something comes up, say, oh, well, we've got money in the budget for that. But that's not the only question we need to ask. Is it in the budget? We also need to find out, is it in the bank? Is the money there to be able to afford this expenditure? Because right now the budget is out of balance. And so we need to be careful in all of our expenditures. But I don't think we can be careful enough to get that all the way down. What other options do we have? Well, we can eliminate the note. That would save $166 per week over the year's time in payments, because we're paying about $8,600 a year on that note, something over that. Our next payment is due on August the 1st, and that will be $80,000. If we wanted to pay it off, the payout, as of the next payment date, that is, the payment that would be due then plus the remaining principal would be $80,500 and some odd dollars. How could we do that? We could sell some property. We might could sell it between now and then. I don't know, because the market's not that great. We've got the rental houses just over here on Old Dixie Highway. There are two houses. The one next door to us is not ours, but the two beyond it are. And they are producing an income of about $1,125 gross per month. We could also, we have a deal with Charlie. He owns some property down on Shopke Lester Road that backs onto ours. He's got two lots there. One of them has a house on it. The other one has a lot of frontage on Shopke Lester Road, but it's a very shallow lot, and it's not buildable at the moment. He proposed that we trade some so that we would have a, I think, 60 foot frontage on Shopke Lester, which and would go on back. It'd be a part of our property all the way back, and he would get some property from us to make it deeper, his lot deeper, so he could build on it, have something built there. And so we'd have a lot there that we could sell. We'd have to have some survey and work done and the deeds recorded and all that kind of thing. But it could be done, and there'd be a few thousand dollars that could be gained from that, again, if it could be sold. And I believe we could also carve a lot out on the far side of the parsonage, Monty's place where he's living, and carve a lot out there and sell that. By selling all of those properties, I think we could come up with the amount needed. But we'd have to do that as is, because we don't have the money, the funds, to be able to put repairs into the houses. They'd have to be sold as fixer-uppers for someone who wanted investments. Other options? I tell you, we're open. We've racked our brains trying to find other options. And we're open to suggestions. How are we going to survive until something can be done? Well, cash flow is the issue. With Cletus stepping down, and with the income from the rentals, we can meet the note payment and keep things going. But we don't have anything to repair those rentals. And frankly, I'm embarrassed by being a slumlord. If we're going to keep them, we need to get them fixed. We can keep going. We're not facing bankruptcy. I used that word in the men's meeting as probably a poor choice of words. It had some shock value, and I think we needed a shock value, but we're not facing bankruptcy. But we do need to do something about those properties. Either get them fixed, we figure we're not sure how much it'll take, probably $10,000. But right now it's $10,000 we don't have. So we can get through this year, all right. And next year, since we won't, Cletus has stepped down, we will be in better shape. But the income from that is still not much more than our note payment. So we need to either get rid of the note payment or do something to get those properties fixed. And that's basically where we are. Wanted you to know that and see just what the financial part of this crisis is. But let me remind you, crisis is a time of testing of what we really care about. Where do we really want to go? It's a time of testing in our personal lives when crisis comes. It's a time of testing in our life as a church, a congregation. Where do we want to go? What do we want to be as a church? How will we respond? Our invitation song, which Bert told you that I'd suggested the songs to him, our invitation song is, I'll live for him who died for me. That's an affirmation as we sing it. Do we mean it? Let's stand.